Welcome to Recalculating Small Business. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
Dan, we have a great guest now, Tom Sullivan. He's vice president for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce on Small Business. He's here to tell us about what I think is an exciting new survey they just completed. Tom, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Tom, tell us a little bit about yourself before we do anything else, and then tell us some of the high points of the survey.
Well, I run the small business program for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. We represent the interests of about 3 million business owners. The vast majority of them are small. I think over 90% of the businesses at the U.S. Chamber have fewer than 100 employees. 75% have fewer than 20 employees, and that includes our partnerships with state and local chambers of commerce as well. So it is a great job to have, where every day I represent the interests of those millions of small business owners across the country.
Well, that's really great to hear. Now, first, tell us your website, and then tell us what made you decide to do the survey and what's in the survey.
Well, sure. So first of all, the website where all this information is it's uschamber.com/SB index. And the index really is our way to try to keep our finger on the pulse of Main Street. I mean, we can't be everywhere all the time. We are traveling to 5 cities and 4 states very shortly. But even with that type of aggressive roadshow, where we're listening to small business owners, we needed to take the pulse on a regular basis. So we are working with Ipsos, which is a polling firm, to survey 1,000 small business owners every quarter, and we then track those results on an index. We've been doing it now for 13 months, and that index, as you would suspect, asks small business owners how they did, how are they doing, and what is their confidence in their future. And this last survey that we just got the results back last week was really, really exciting. We see the small business index rose 3 points from the last quarter to 66.3. That means 66.3% of the small business owners surveyed are very confident in the economy. So that's good news for this country.
Well, that's exciting, and we want to get into the details, but I'm going to turn it over to Dan, because I know he just loves these stats.
Yeah, I'm a numbers guy. Tom, welcome.
Thank you
for joining us. So if you look at the survey, tell me what you think was the most surprising statistic.
So I'll tell you what the most surprising thing is, and then what we hope for and actually achieve. So what I found the most surprising and gratifying is that for the first time since we started this survey, we see confidence in the national economy better than confidence in the local communities. And what we had seen in the past year was this disconnect between how small business owners felt about their immediate business and their immediate communities, which is always very high. Small business owners are some of the most optimistic people in the world. But we saw that confidence actually lower when they looked at things that were outside of their control. And for us in Washington, D.C., that a lot of times that means lack of confidence in what's going on in national policy and in Washington, D.C. And this past survey, for the first time since we started the polls, actually showed their confidence in the national economy as higher than their local. And so when we say the expression that small business owners have the wind at their back and not at their in their face, these results back that expression up, and it's very exciting. So that was the most surprising. What we had hoped for and actually came true was the reaction to how small business owners view tax reform legislation. So there's two parts to that, and you're the numbers guy, so I think you'll appreciate this. The first part is that we're viewing that as the direct corollary to the positive confidence in the national economy. The fact that Congress and the president came together and actually passed economic policy that benefits small business. And then what we saw in actually asking small business owners about this is that we heard back that for every one small business owner that doesn't think that the tax reform will help, there are two times that number that actually feel as though tax reform will help them. So to see the results of small business owners who are going to be working throughout this entire year to figure out how the lower rates affect how those lower rates affect their business, to see that immediate uptick in confidence and optimism was what we hoped for and actually bore out in the numbers. So we're pretty excited about that.
So if we look at your analysis, we could be saying that this is much like the market has a Trump rally. This is a Trump economy. This is a man who said to America he wanted to make America great again, and he didn't think that something less than 3% GDP was good enough for the American businessman and the American economy. And I think that he changed the psychology of small business people who think that maybe America is going in the right direction again. And so is there anything to substantiate that or, on the contrary, disagree with the idea that much of this is under Trump's leadership?
I don't think there's much data that I see that would contradict that statement. I think from the small business owners who we've heard really do get frustrated that as hard as they work and the jobs that they're creating and the innovation they're leading with, you know, sometimes the thanks they get is a bunch of red tape from Washington, D.C. And so when you use the expression, has this president changed that? I think the numbers that we saw in that first quarter absolutely back up that statement, is that finally small business owners are saying, you know, all this hard, you know, maybe what's going on in Washington, D.C. is really intended to help me instead of prevent me from doing what I do best. And from a small business owner's perspective, that is growing the communities, hiring people, providing benefits for employees, and innovating. All those things, small business owners feel as though that Washington, D.C. is applauding that instead of thinking of ways to dampen it down.
Right. It's interesting, Tom, the way you put that, because what we're looking at is that for most of our industrialized history as a nation, the small business man or woman saw small business as the business of America. And for some period of time, the small businessman, as you pointed out a few moments ago, felt that the government was in their face, blowing into them. And it wasn't about business. It was about government bureaucracy and regulations and giveaways and all these kinds of things that were disheartening. So I think that there is a reversal, and it sounds like what I'm saying is you're substantiating. But let me throw one other curve at you.
Sure.
Do you think we have a situation where there have been people running small business under the previous administration and all of its restrictions and all of its talking about the best days may be behind us and we'll never see 3% again in GDP and the jobs are not coming back, that there are a lot of people even in small business who are going to have to adjust to an economy where they can make money and they're encouraged to make money, they're encouraged to expand their business? Is that a cultural shock that a lot of people are going to have to go through?
I'm not sure if it's a shock as much as a sense over the last 8 to 12 years that the incredible men and women who run small business have done everything to be successful despite what's gone on in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And I think the shock is that those incredible men and women will still be successful, but they feel as though they have a partner in that success. I'm not sure if that's a cultural change or if it's simply a very positive outlook that the economy is gearing up and small business owners who are hit first in a recession and they recover last finally are in a position to experience that recovery. And what we expect to happen in the quarters ahead is job growth and innovation that will help drive up the economy. And Dan, I don't want to create such a rosy outlook to think that there isn't still very hard work to do, because it's just not the case. And we've got a lot of work to do to make sure that this growth economy and this growth on Main Street actually has the workforce to support that growth. I mean, small business owners more and more are telling us that they need qualified and willing employees. And so we're not only excited about small business owners being bullish on tax reform and being bullish on the economy, but we know that we have got to really put our shoulder to the task and make sure that issues like the skills gap, issues like workforce development, education, all continue to be front and center so that small business owners have the workforce that will enable them to grow.
Yeah, we're getting a jobs number on Friday, and some of the early predictors are saying that it's possible that the unemployment rate, which they say 4.5% is full employment, could hit 4 or lower on this past 30 days. Let me move on back to the survey if I could. So we talked about all the positive things that have come out of the survey. What are small business most worried about, and what's concerning you?
Well, there's two things that are concerned that kind of popped up in our survey for this last quarter. One is what we've known for a long time, but it becomes important, especially after the wake of horrible disasters in California and Texas and Puerto Rico, and that is that small business owners still operate kind of month to month. I think the accountants who are listening in call that, you know, a cash basis. It's a cash economy for small business. They want to know if they can make payroll this month, not this year. The danger of finding that one in three small businesses does not have a rainy day fund raises a whole set of issues on preparation for things that happen, you know, happen from Mother Nature or family or personal tragedy. And so that's a little bit worrisome. And then I'll get back to really a bigger set of policy issues that need to be addressed in Washington, D.C., and that is how to address the desperate need on Main Street, and quite frankly, every street in America, to get qualified and willing employees to fuel the type of growth that can get this economy going at full speed. So there's a whole set of issues there. Some folks call them workforce issues that deserve our attention, and it's a high priority for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
So, Tom, I have another question, and I'm going to throw it over to Don for it, see if he has anything he wants to add. The workforce development issue is a big issue. Mm-hmm. However,
The Bureau of Labor Statistics reports that the last number I saw was just under 96 million people out of the workforce. And some of those are people who have retired. Some of them are people who are disabled and a lots of different reasons. But it would seem to me that we have a fundamental shift taking place in that people like old people like me and Don, who are continuing to work because we like to work, I suspect that there might be millions of people in that 96 million people who might like to find some kind of work to go back to supplement their income, to deal with the devastation that took place in the portfolios in 2000 to 2010. So what about redeveloping and harvesting those 96 million people who are not in the workforce?
Well, Dan, I think you raise a great point, and that is that there's no silver bullet when it comes to getting a workforce that is ready and engaged to grow our economy. I mean, this is a full buffet of policies that have to be addressed, whether it's retirement age, whether it's apprenticeships, whether it's immigration, whether it's disability policy, opioids, high school education, full menu of policy issues that feed into the whole idea of growing our economy. And all of those issues are front and center on Tom Donahue's plate. He's the head of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And I love the fact that radio shows like yours are raising these issues. They're talking about more seniors getting involved in businesses. I would posit that some of those seniors that you talk about make tremendous entrepreneurs as well. And so all of that should be easier in this economy, but there's a lot of work to do.
Yeah, and we need to, but maybe your organization can help those small business people to begin to think about seniors and retirees or people out of work as that part of that labor pool that they're not tapping into, that they might be surprised what's really there.
I think that's a really good suggestion, Dan. Thank you.
Okay. Don, back to you.
I hate to break in, Dan. You're doing such a good job. He pays me a quarter after the show. But anyway, Tom, I'm so glad you're on the program. I'd like for our audience, for you to kind of recap the three or four major things from the study, the top three positives and the top three negatives of the study, because it's so in line. I've seen four other studies in the past week, including one that just came out today from another organization backing it up. And it's, quite frankly, not being reported in the major media because it goes against their storyline. But would you mind repeating them for our audience?
Sure. I'll try to keep them three and three. So let's go with the three negatives because I love to end with a positive. So I think one negative is if you look at the regional breakdowns, you still see the Northeast kind of lagging from other parts of the country as far as confidence goes. So, you know, maybe with a spring thaw, maybe after the storms of this weekend, the confidence will pick back up. But you see the South and the Midwest really kind of topping out the numbers. So I think we've got some work to do in the Northeast. Another negative is that one third of small business owners don't have a rainy day fund. And quite frankly, another negative is that we've got a long way to go before the vast majority of small business owners are bullish on growth. I mean, we're right now we're in the kind of in the 50% range, and so we've got, you know, it's a glass half empty, glass half full. And so I'll shift to the top three of the glass half full. I mean, the first is that the first positive is that we're at an all-time high for our survey at confidence levels of 66.3. I think that's fantastic. Another positive is that we see 2-1 in small business owners being favorable to tax reform. And number three isn't in the survey, but it's just my own sense of optimism. And that is that with accountants like a gentleman I visited a couple of weeks ago in Toms River, New Jersey. He's an accountant, Mark Krugman. He is real bullish on tax reform and how it affects small business. And so I predict that our 2-to-1 in favor actually grows to a 3-to-1 or 4 or 5-to-1 as more and more small business owners start looking at what their 2018 taxes involve. And so that process, as you know, starts early April when you're starting to fill out your first quarterly payments. And throughout 2018, as more folks meet with the Mark Krugmans and the other CPAs of the world, I think that that optimism and the reality of what lower tax rates mean for small business is what is going to translate into incredible confidence and optimism for the small business community.
That's really, Tom, I'd like to go in a different direction and ask, do you do any analysis of gender? There seems to be a disagreement as to whether more women than men now are starting businesses. Have you any data on that, on women, et cetera, and also the complaints that women don't get the credit that in terms of financing that men? Do you have any data on that?
Our index doesn't cover some of the growth and access to capital issues, disparities that are gender-based. And I think we're running short of time. So I'll close with the fact that this survey does have a breakdown of attitudes towards the tax reform broken down by women-owned and men-owned and minority-owned businesses. We see the highest confidence of tax reform from men at 48% compared to 21%. Women are pretty close. We've got a 44% approval rating of tax reform compared to 31%. And then minority businesses is a little bit in reverse. We do not see a 50-50 split on how minority-owned businesses view tax reform. So we've got a long way to go. Hopefully more and more of these folks will be talking with their CPAs and become more bullish on how tax reform helps them.
Dan, back to you. I could go on, but you always do better with these kind of guests.
I think Tom's telling us he's got to go, but I just have one quick question. Tom, as you pointed out, you expect confidence to grow. And given that no Democrat voted in favor of the tax reform bill, do you think that doesn't bode well for them in the midterm elections?
I can't predict. I'm a policy guy, not a political guy. I do expect that throughout 2018, more and more small business owners are going to be able to figure out what tax cuts mean for their business. I mean, these are mom and pop businesses who do not have a tax and accounting division. And so it's going to take them all year to figure that out. And I believe that as they figure out, you're going to see confidence up, you're going to see growth up, you're going to see job numbers up, and I don't know how that's going to bode for midterm elections, but I think it's going to bode very well for our economy.
Your website again for our listeners?
Sure. It's www.uschamber.com/SB index.
Thank you so much, Tom. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. You guys have a great show. It's an honor to be on. Thank you.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit costs. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your featured book. I want to tell you about a recent interview I had with Bob Bethel, a turnaround specialist with lots of success in small business. Bob's new book is Strengthen Your Business, Fail-Proof Strategies for Small Business. He tells us of his life successes and failures that have made him and his clients so successful. Over the years, Bob has brought 77 companies back from the brink and changed them into thriving, profitable businesses. His energy is amazing, and at 74, he proves that you can still have a great deal to give others if you just try. His suggestions are easy to understand and very helpful. One insight struck me was that most companies do not have a plan. The old Chinese proverb says, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there, is true today. Bob Bethel's book, Strengthen Your Business, can be found at Amazon.com or can be ordered at your local bookstore. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz featured book.
Marcus Lemonis, J.D. Powers, and John Scully, and 100 other presidents and experts contributed to Recalculating the Book. Why did all these people agree to contribute to the book? I'm Don Mazzella, and I'm the editorial director of Small Business Digest. And for 20 years, we have been offering small business leaders information and data to increase profits. Recalculating the Book was named the best small business book by the Independent Press Association. Whether you need help with marketing, staffing, finance, operations, technology, or many other subjects, they're all here in Recalculating the Book. They're now available at Amazon at a reduced cost. We've also created the radio program Recalculating on Recalculating.biz.
Dan's tip of the day should resonate with every small business. Having a bright, clear, physical plan always adds profits. One recent survey revealed 71% of walkers responded that they would enter a newly refurbished establishment even if they didn't have anything to buy or were in the market for buy. So how important is it a small business for physical establishments where customers come in to buy? It's very important. Sprucing up a small business makes sense. Saving cents may cost a small business dollars if the right quality paint is not used. According to Hotel Association figures, the average time between major spruce-ups for hotels, for member hotels, dropped from 8 to 7 years in the past 12 months. Why? Because new establishments are very important. But don't think these statistics apply only to brick-and-mortar stores. The entry page for any business is that company's storefront. For those online leaders who think they are immune to the need for change to their storefronts, think again. While changing index pages initially loses visitors, new visitors are usually generated within 3 months. So today's message, in a physical plant or online, stay new, it will help profits.
Dan, tell us a little bit about your new book.
The book literally just went on for sale on Amazon. It's called Why Can't Grammy Remember Me? I believe it's the first book of its kind written for children of ages 9 to 12 dealing with dementia. And it's done as a mystery. And it's about two little girls, Hudson and Charlotte, who come face to face with trying to figure out what's happening to James's grandmother who has dementia. The children or grandchildren are the forgotten part of this puzzle of dementia. Mom and dad are spending so much time trying to figure out how to help grandma and grandpa. They pay less attention to the needs of their grandchildren to understand what's happening to grandma and grandpa. So hopefully this book will not only help 9 to 12-year-olders, but also it's also written for an entire family and has a whole series of programs and things that families can do together to preserve the memory of their grandparents. Available at Amazon.com.
And tell them the name of the book again.
Why Can't Grammy Remember Me? You know, Don, one of the things we need to do is remind people they can go to recalculating.biz and they can listen to this show and any show that we've put on the air. So go to recalculating.biz and download our videos where you can actually see and hear the subject matter that we're discussing.
Welcome back to Recalculating, the program dedicated to American small business. Now it's time to bring together our two experts, Dan Perkins and Don Mazzella, as they discuss things that are happening now that are affecting your business success.
You know, Dan, Amy Barone and I belong to the same Union League club. And over the years that I've come to know her, I've always been impressed by two things, her poetry and her business acumen. That's why I invited her to join us today to talk about her books. And equally important to our small business audience, how she's done such a clever job of really promoting her books. Amy, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Don. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you here. Amy, first, tell us a little bit about your background, the name of your books, and your website.
Okay. Well, my newest poetry book is called We Became Summer, and it's a thrill for me because it's my first full-length collection. So it's 61 poems. It has a nice spine to it, and the publisher is New York Quarterly Books, which is a prominent poetry publisher, and I was very delighted to have them accept my book for a publication. It was just released. And then I have two chapbooks in circulation. The last one is called Kamikaze Dance, and it's by Finishing Line Press. And I had been a finalist in their annual New Women's Voices chapbook competition. And my first book that came out in 2008 is called Views from the Driveway, and that's by Foothills Publishing. So that's what I have on the in the archives, and I'm working hard now to market We Became Summer.
And how are you doing it?
Well, what I'm doing is I'm spending a lot of time querying potential book reviewers. Luckily, with New York Quarterly, they send out, they have a good Rolodex of book reviewers, and they seem to have, you know, a strong following. So I think that this book will be much more successful than the earlier books because of the help of my publisher. But then on my own, because I'm part of a large poetry community, especially in New York City, in the area, I'm reaching out to potential book reviewers, so I'm trying to get the book reviewed, and I'm scheduling readings, mostly in the New York and Philadelphia area. And already, you know, April is Poetry Month, so in April, I already have six different poetry readings I'll be carrying out.
Well, that's really interesting. But Amy, tell us a little bit about your background in business, et cetera, that enables you to kind of reach out. We've had people on this program talk about how it's so critical if you're creating a book to kind of expose your expertise to market it.
I think all writers really have to you know, become promotional machines. It's very rare that you can sit back and just wait for the, you know, the sales to climb. So I've been a communications director for several nonprofit companies. I've worked in state government here in New York, and also, you know, in private industry. What's interesting is I've also been a reporter. I was an Italian correspondent in Milan back in the 90s for Women's Wear Daily, an advertising age, Crane's Communications, several of their publications. So I kind of see firsthand, you know, I love being a reporter because, you know, you're giving people free news and publicity, and they love you for it. But then to be on the other end, it's more challenging. And because, you know, you want to get your reviews in prominent literary journals. And it's always, you know, there's competition and people have, you know, limited resources. So I'm, you know, working aggressively. But, yes, I think my business background helps because I, you know, I've worked extensively in PR. And I'm certainly not shy about, you know, sending out query letters and trying to set up readings, as I said, in New York and Philadelphia. You know, I don't have a website, Don, but I'm active on Facebook and Twitter. And Facebook is a huge resource for me as a poet, because I probably have like 800 contacts, just fellow poets and their poetry groups where I can list, well, I always list my events there, and then different groups that support me where I can, again, list future readings or post photos of having been out at an open mic. And, you know, to keep the idea of my new book in circulation, I feel that social media is very important.
Well, that's really great. Dan, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you. I'm curious, Amy, you just told us that you don't have a website. Help us understand in a digital world how an author who makes their living off of words decides not to have a website.
Well, you know, I have to say that I've networked with several, you know, good poetry friends, and I've, you know, asked them extensively about it, and they feel it's redundant. A lot of my friends and associates who have websites, and I'm talking, you know, poetry, you know, not, you know, I'm not a novelist or anything like that, but they say that people don't really visit their websites, that, you know, you'd be up to, I just feel that it would be redundant, because with Facebook, I don't, you know, I don't put a lot of nonsense on there, but I will post my readings. You know, there's the event section. If there's news, I actually have a page just for my book. And I did that for my last book too. So, you know, I've gotten a number of people to like it, and I'll post information and news directly related to my book and reading. So I'm not saying it's an optimal decision, but for now it works for me because people know what's going on. I've had people find me on Facebook with my last book and ask me to come out and read in Philadelphia. So I feel that there's this huge community, as I said, and it's an optimal resource.
So is your principal distribution of your books your readings?
No, very fortunately, New York Quarterly has a strong distribution channel. You know, it's available on Amazon, at Barnes & Noble, and Small Press Distribution, spdbooks.org, which is a phenomenal resource for small presses. He sends it around to bookstores and libraries. So, as I was saying, I'm in an ideal situation with New York Quarterly Books.
Right. So, in a sense, you're using other people's websites to leverage your position without having a website.
Well, you know, I do have an author's page on Amazon. I'm on Goodreads, and I try to stay active on that. I'll probably get into, you know, the giveaways that you can do with new books. Am I leveraging other people's websites? Well, you know, I'm using resources that you really have to embrace when you're in my situation. I'm not saying I'm not going to one day create a website, but I think that I would just be putting out redundant information. I think, yeah, it's strong when someone's asking you for a website, like I'm a member of PEN America Center, and, you know, most prominent authors have websites, but I don't know, this works for me right now.
So I happened to see an interview with an author who was talking about his evolution as a writer. He's a novelist. And
yeah.
And we had last week on our show, we had two women who have a business that helps authors gain brand recognition of their work, and and so it was interesting their approach to the idea that an author is in essence creating a brand with their name and what they do. And she talked how the brand evolves the more books you write. So you're in your third book.
Yeah.
Is that right?
And this is my my largest collection. So nice size spine.
Okay.
Yes.
So are you finding
that as you have brought out the second and now the third book, even though the third book is perhaps more robust than the other two, that the sequencing of doing something on a regular basis, something new, has helped you build your brand?
Definitely. And I garner, you know, extensive support from other writers and poets, say, out there in New York. Now, I was at two poetry readings yesterday. You know, your calendar, you can be out every night of the week, and I have to let a lot of people down weekends because so many events are going on. So I do feel that the more, you know, you're out there supporting other writers, they support you. And it's kind of snowballed it. I've definitely come a long way since my first book.
Do you sell books at your readings?
I do. I always have them on hand.
And how do you decide, as you said, you could be out every night, how do you make the decision of what reading you want to go to?
A lot of the readings have a format where they'll have two, three, four featured poets who have the most time on stage, and then they might have an open mic. So I usually, if I know the featured poets, and, you know, often we're friends too, they support me, I'll go out and support him or her. That usually is the deciding factor.
Hmm.
And, you know, last weekend I was at Sidewalk Cafe. They had Boog City Festival, which is a larger festival in the summer months, but I guess they have a winter festival. And, you know, a friend was putting on a poetry play. There were some poets I knew performing. So I went out for that.
How many people would participate, be in the audience in one of those typical readings?
That particular reading, I would say about 40, 45 people.
Okay.
That's
a good-sized crowd. Yeah.
But
so where do you see your career going from here?
From here?
Are you working on a new book?
I actually am. You know, I started last year. I kind of changed the themes of some of the poems I'm writing. And, I do have an idea, but I think I'm going to put most of my energy right now into marketing the new book. But I'm always writing, and I seem to write more in the spring months. And a lot of poets, they don't all honor Poetry Month because, you know, it's just another maybe Hallmark card kind of holiday. But I write every day in April. So this is kind of my writing period.
Do you have a genre or a theme that is that's consistent, that runs its way through your poetry, or subject matter that you write about all the time?
You know, yes, I do. I write a lot about place. You know, place is important to me. I've lived in Italy. I was raised in the suburbs outside of Philadelphia in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, and I go back there often. I am inspired by, you know, where I'm from. That comes into a lot of my poems, and that's really the impetus behind We Became Summer, because I still really remember a lot of child and adolescent summers, and, you know, life was a little bit different before the internet, and how we listened to music and television, things were different. So I would say that place and, you know, family conflict comes into a lot of my poems, a little relationship conflict. But then I use color and nature, and I'm a big music buff, so it all comes together.
Do you miss being a reporter?
Yes, that was my favorite job. I really did enjoy, you know, it was trade publications, and as we know, media has really been radicalized since the 90s, and print, you know, has lost its luster in many ways. So I had to go with the flow. And actually, to survive in New York, I had to get into marketing and public relations. It's what a lot of writers end up doing.
Yeah. I don't know whether you saw the quote recently by the publisher of the New York Times, that he said that the New York Times print edition will be gone within 10 years.
Oh,
it will
did
be
he?
All digital.
Yeah, I believe it. You know, I believe it. But, you know, I have a poem in my new collection called Paperboy's Daughter. And it's kind of reminiscing about, you know, newspapers and how, you know, I remember my father reading them. And you know, it was a different time.
Is that good idea? Is it a good idea for the newspapers to go away?
No. I like newspapers. I like to hold a book. You know, I read mostly books. I don't think so. No.
Don, back to you.
Well, I certainly will agree with Amy about newspapers. Dan, I never knew you to read the New York Times lately, but
I read a story about it online on the internet.
Oh.
Not physically the paper. I don't read it.
For Amy's and the audience's benefit, Dan and I are on another program where we talk all politics. Anyway, it gets really interesting. Amy, your book again, so we know where they can get it.
My book is called Yes, We Became Summer. It's from New York Quarterly Books. And if you go to www.nyq.org, you can find my book. I have an author's page. And as I said, New York Quarterly Books is very, you know, it's robust and supportive of its writers. So I was excited to have my own, you know, section on their website.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and spdbooks.org.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I haven't had a chance yet to pick it up, but I intend to. And Amy, we're really glad you came to join us today.
Well, thank
you.
Thank
you so much.
I appreciate
thank
your
you
support,
much for your time.
And I enjoyed the chat. Thank you.
It was a refreshing change from some of the people we have. It's always good to have a different perspective. Thank you.
Oh, great. Thank you, Don and Dan. I enjoyed it.
Dan Perkins here with your Recalculating Small Business Tip of the Day. Did you know that a candle can be an energy saver for home and office? An old-fashioned candle can be a new-fashioned energy saver and at the same time provide a warm glow to any home office. Adding a candle seems like a silly thing to do, but it can help check for drafts. You can use the candle to test if new windows are needed. Here's how. First, take a roll of blue painter's tape and tear off pieces and put them on your left arm. Pass the candle around the opening and mark the spots around each window and door where the candle flame flickers. When you have finished your test, step back and see if you have tape around all of the window or only one side. The more tape you have on the window, the more money you will save by replacing those windows and doors. Check out recalculating.biz for more useful small business suggestions. This has been Dan Perkins with your small business tip of the day.
Tell me, Dan, tell me about your latest book.
My current book that's coming out, I should say, is Why Can't Grammy Remember Me? And it's really the first book written for children between the ages of 9 and 12 and their families. Dealing with dementia. Dementia is a growing problem with the elderly in the United States and around the world. And we are not very well informed about what's going on, what's happening. So I wrote this book in the form of a mystery. And I have two little girls, 9 and 12, who have a magical power to seem to be able to find things that are lost. And so they go to their dads and moms and they say, you know, we work all over the neighborhood helping people find things. And we seem to find things. And their dad says, yes, you have a magical talent to do that. And they said, we'd like to start a business to see if we can help other people. So they decided to start a business. The two girls' name are Hudson and Charlotte. And they start H&C's Lost and Found. If you've lost it, we find it. And so they build a business, and they convince the dads to build them an office and a treehouse
in the backyard, and they get busy making posters and flyers trying to get customers, and their dads take them downtown, and they put them in the windows and on the telephone poles and light poles, and they go home, and first week goes by, and nobody comes, and the second week and third week, and nobody comes. They're really, really dejected, and the fourth week comes, and there's a knock at the door, and they walk over and open the door, and there's a young man standing there with one of their flyers in his hands. And he says to them, my dad says the reason why my Grammy can't remember me is because she's lost her memory. And your flyer says you find things that are lost. Can you find my Grammy's memory? Well, they don't know anything about memory. So they take his name and they go see their dads to see what can happen. And the story evolves into how they learn about what dementia is and what's going on in the body when somebody has dementia. And then they decide, while they can't find their customer's memory, they can help him build the tools to retain her in his memory. And so at the end of the book, there are about 10 to 12, 13 things that families can do together to work on to preserve the memory of Grandma and Grandpa so the generations can know who these people were. And that's the story.
What a great book. When will it be available, and how can people get it?
Well, it'll be available on Amazon.com. A lot of people who have read it, who've had moms and dads that have been stricken with Alzheimer's or dementia, tell me that they really now begin to understand what's happening in Grandma's brain. And we took a different approach. Rather than do the typical brain cross-section, we design, I work with the artist, and we design highways in the brain. And there's a brain of one of the little girls and the brain of Grammy. They both have highways, roads, but where the girl's brain, everything is green and go. Grammy's brain is full of no left turns, do not enter, stop, no right turns. So all of the messages that need to come from our brain get screwed up, and we can't function. Great illustrations, though. Wonderful illustrations.
Well, say goodbye, Dan.
All right.
Time for us to go.
Thank you for joining us. And by the way, if you didn't hear all of today's show, you can go to recalculating.biz, and you can pick up this show and past shows to expand your knowledge as becoming more successful entrepreneurs. Thank you for joining us. And we'll talk to you next week.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Dan Perkins here from Songs and Stories for Soldiers with your veterans tip of the day. As a veteran, are you getting everything that you're entitled to? Many merchants are proud to offer discounts to veterans. They can be anything from a big box store to the corner market. Most don't do a very good job of promoting their veterans programs, so you'll have to do a little homework and find them on your own. This is especially important if you're making a major purchase like appliances or even a new car. So when you're going to the store, get into the habit of asking the salesperson, do you offer discounts to veterans? If they say yes, then ask how much. If you need a new refrigerator or a new washer and dryer, the discount for you could be significant. So make sure you get what you're entitled to by stepping up and asking, do you offer discounts for veterans? Your wallet will be better off for asking. This has been Dan Perkins with your Songs and Stories for Soldiers.us Veterans Tip of the Day.
Welcome back to Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful. Now it's time for Money in Motion. Dan Perkins is our resident expert in making the money you earn work as hard as you do. Here is Dan Perkins.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your featured book. I want to tell you about a recent interview I had with Bob Bethel,
a turnaround specialist with lots of success in small business. Bob's new book is Strengthen Your Business, Fail-Proof Strategies for Small Business. He tells us of his life successes and failures that have made him and his clients so successful. Over the years, Bob has brought 77 companies back from the brink and changed them into thriving, profitable businesses. His energy is amazing, and at 74, he proves that you can still have a great deal to give others if you just try. His suggestions are easy to understand and very helpful. One insight struck me was that most companies do not have a plan. The old Chinese proverb says, "If you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there," is true today. Bob Bethel's book, Strengthen Your Business, can be found at Amazon.com or can be ordered at your local bookstore. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz featured book.
Dan Perkins here for Recalculating for Small Business with your tip of the day. Should you belong to a local marketing network? One area of potential business is other small business owners through marketing networks. These groups usually meet once or twice a month for lunch and discussions. Sometimes the group will invite a guest speaker to talk about how they are building their brand. People in different businesses generally go and make up these groups. If you have a computer problem, perhaps one of the members of your group can fix your problem, or at least tell you about somebody they've used to fix their problems. Sometimes members of your group can use your product or services. So here's your Recalculating for Small Business tip of the day. Reach out and ask your fellow business friends if they belong to a marketing group. And if they do, tell them you'd like to go. Shop around and find a group or two that you like. You'll make new friends and maybe find new customers. This is Dan Perkins with your Recalculating Small Business Tip of the Day.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your Small Business Tip of the Day. Are you protecting yourself against lazy lawsuits? You may be asking, what is a lazy lawsuit? This is a lawsuit because you have not been paying attention to the details. It used to be that you could do business on a handshake, but unfortunately, not anymore. Handshakes don't have any details, so both parties have to remember the same things for the handshake to work. The problem enters in when memories fail, and it turns into he said and she said. Here is the Recalculating Small Business tip of the day. Work with the client in developing a contract. That way your customer will be putting in writing what he expects you to do and when the job is to be completed. You will know what and when is expected of you. It may take a little extra time, but it will save you both time and money. I'm Dan Perkins from Recalculating.biz with your Small Business Tip of the Day.
Dan Perkins here with your Recalculating Small Business Tip of the Day. Did you know that a candle can be an energy saver for home and office? An old-fashioned candle can be a new-fashioned energy saver, and at the same time provide a warm glow to any home office. Adding a candle seems like a silly thing to do, but it can help check for drafts. You can use the candle to test if new windows are needed. Here's how. First, take a roll of blue painter's tape and tear off pieces and put them on your left arm. Pass the candle around the opening and mark the spots around each window and door where the candle flame flickers. When you have finished your test, step back and see if you have tape around all of the window or only one side. The more tape you have on the window, the more money you will save by replacing those windows and doors. Check out recalculating.biz for more useful small business suggestions. This has been Dan Perkins with your Small Business Tip of the Day.
Welcome back to Recalculating, the program dedicated to American small business. Now it's time to bring together our two experts, Dan Perkins and Don Mazzella, as they discuss things that are happening now that are affecting your business success.
Well, Dan, what do you think about today's guests?
I thought they were terrific. We had great diversity. We had some really good ideas on small business and what they can do with credit and how they can save money with the gentleman from Spent. So I think there was a lot of good stuff. Again, continuing the idea that we are on the air to try and help small businesses grow their businesses and start them. And again, we had content today that dealt with both. And as in the past, if you didn't get all of this show, you can go to our website, recalculating.biz, and look at past shows and expand your education, how you can be better at what you're doing in a small business.
Agreed. Great show, Dan.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.